Blog Talk Radio.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth
drama.
All right, welcome to Smooth Drama with your host, Dick Hugger, a.k.a. F the N-word, along with my illustrious co-host, Miss 100%. Today, we'll be interviewing illustrator, publisher, author, Mr. Jeremy Berle. So, if you got a question for us, or you just want to holler at Mr. Berle, feel free to give us a call, 646-929-2037. Once again, 646-929-2037 is the number. You have any questions, comments, concerns, you're too afraid to call, feel free to email me, dickatsmoothdrama.com. Also, we have the Blog Talk chat room that you can post your questions and comments in. As well as if you go to if you go to the Smooth Drama site and you go to the news page, you can see the show and you can also chat with us live from the Smooth Drama site. So it's a new thing and we want your interaction. So feel free going to the Smooth Drama site, www.smoothdrama.com, and you go to our news section and you can watch the show live and you can chat with us interactively. Now, also, what we're trying to do here, we're trying to get Miss 100% to come on the camera. You know, she's a little camera shy. So, trying to start an online petition to get Miss 100% to participate in the video part of the show. So, we want to hear from you. All right. So, y'all request it, and we'll make it happen. She will have no choice but to just get over her stage fright and come on. Speaking of stage fright.
That is just so wrong.
I know it's wrong, but hey, sometimes you got to be wrong before you can be right. Also, speaking of right, now remember earlier this year, everybody was having a big to-do over Haiti, and when rapper, artist Wyclef Jean was talking about running for president of Haiti, everybody's, oh, you rapper, you unqualified.
Right.
What do they do? They elect Michael Martelli, also known as Sweet Mickey. He's a 50-year-old pop singer. Now, I mean, and what makes it even worse, not only is he a singer, pop singer, pop singers are better than rappers, but his guests included Bill Clinton, no biggie, but former dictator Jean-Claude Baby Doc Duvalier and Jean Bertrand Aristide. You know, two dudes who ran Haiti into the ground was the guest. So I guess two dictators and then he's going to be the third one. The third time's the charm, I guess. Haiti ain't suffering enough. They've elected a dude named Sweet Mickey, whose friends he invites are people who basically tore the country down in the first place.
I guess they're trying to say that anything is better than being a hip-hop artist. Is that what they're trying to say? But
yeah. Hey. Because, you know, the worst thing that he'll do is he'll write a hip hop song about Haiti.
Right. Raise millions of dollars in relief funds to actually help the country, huh?
Well, you know, I just think it's just funny that they say that no, we don't want no rapper, but then they have a singer, and then the singer invites guys who basically fucked up the country in the first place. Good job. And they wonder why nothing ever gets done over there. Yep, the beat goes on.
I'm just mad at the name, Sweet Mickey.
Yeah, Sweet Mickey. That's what it is. Speaking of sweet, there's some gay outing. Former Villanova ball player Will Sheridan and a basketball executive for the Phoenix Suns, Don Lemon, came out and said they were gay, to which I say, okay, so what? They told people I've been out of shape. Well, gay people have been around since the dawn of time. Plato, Socrates, all them dudes was gay. So a basketball player coming out, yeah, I'm gay. Okay, thumbs up.
I wonder why did they feel the need to go public with their personal lives like that?
Well, like you said, you wonder why they even want to go through it. I'm like, why is it even news?
Why is it even relevant?
Right, exactly. It's not. Now, it's funny. This is all over the web as far as news goes, but the real important thing that happened, the Supreme Court okays warrantless searches.
Yes.
Now, I'm like, I had to go over it and read it again. This happened Monday. The Supreme Court gave police more leeway to break into your home in search of illegal drugs when they suspect the evidence might be destroyed. So basically, if they suspect you might have drugs, they can bust into your house. I don't know what else can you know, people say, conspiracy theorists, you know, it ain't all that serious. I'm like, if this ain't serious, I don't know what the hell is. They can suspect that you have drugs, and they can bust in your house without a warrant, and whatever, and just arrest your ass. And they can just say that you have drugs. I mean, let's say you were a political activists,
yeah,
causing trouble for the police and powers that be. They just say, you got drugs. They bust in your house and they arrest you.
And they will make it sick, trust me.
Right. This is what I'm saying. Now, some folks think, nah, that won't happen if you innocent. I guess. But then when it happens to you, what will you say? I mean, because basically now you can't do anything. And when I say anything, I'm talking about protesting against your rights being taken away. I mean, because this is it. And I know I was reading, my homegirl Teresa was like, damn, what the hell can we do? I mean, can we impeach the judges? Judges are in for life until they die.
Right.
So, unless there's a massive upheaval in the world where people are like, nah, we're not taking this shit, and we're not going to have, you know, laws where the police can just bust in the house anytime they want with no repercussions. I mean, that probably was in the Constitution, but all that's just done now. So we take account here. The police can bust into your house with no provocation whatsoever and just arrest you. They can take you down to the station, according to the law that was passed earlier this year or last year. They don't have to read your Miranda rights. You can ask for a lawyer, they can still detain you. And on top of that, you don't have the right to remain silent. You have to. So,
so you can't even fart.
Nothing.
Scratch your ass, blink an eye, without getting something pinned on you. There's no more right to privacy. There's no more freedom of speech. There's no more. This is what we have been talking about for a very long time.
Right.
And
it's here.
It's here. It's happening right before our eyes. And yet and still, I bet you there's a lot of people out there that's going to argue, well, isn't this going to help with the so-called war on drugs?
Mm.
Wake up. But first of all, there is no war on drugs to begin with, because the people that is floating and flying that shit in here and selling it are the ones that got it started to begin with. They don't want it to go away. Why are we over there? Why are we overseas?
Well,
for poppy fields?
Pretty much. I mean, and speaking of the poppy fields, real quick, I mean, that was Osama bin Laden was basically Scarface. And the fact that people are now talking about, oh, Osama bin Laden had porn. I'm like, really, that's news? A grown man looking at porn is not news. Just like a guy being gay is not news.
It's not news.
Yeah. A guy was looking at porn? Ooh. Yeah. No, that's news. We gonna take a commercial break. This is Jazari X. What's peace?
I drop my son off to school every day. I dropped him off on Friday. I gave him money. I told him I loved him. Have a good day. I'll see you later. I did not know that was going to be the last day that I saw my son alive. And I'm so mad. I'm so mad.
What's peace when you present in the residence? So decadent, whose negligence evidenced by millions without medicine. In Iran, we threatened it with weapons meant to pressure them. Calling up regiments, is that peace, Mr. President? Even veterans on the ride back from Iraq get sidetracked and find that they never get their lives back. What's peace when it's hijacked by politics so obvious, but they never acknowledge it, cause they scared of the lobbyists. And then a tsunami hits, and bodies get deposited, and blue waters turn red like a communist. What's peace when Obama gets attacked again because of his African heritage, and Republicans are backing the terrorists, and we lack an awareness, so we revel in the destruction of the indigenous people by a devil named Columbus. What's peace in the shattered lands of Pakistan, Afghanistan, where bombs hit like a batarang and death is like an avalanche? See what's produced by savage hands and scattered clans, where troops don't have a battle plan and most youth don't have a chance. None of us deserve a prize for peace. We just want a life of ease, talking revolution but never ready to fight and bleed. What's peace when police put our hurting on the person who they supposed to be serving, cause he didn't tuck his shirt in? What's peace when you burdened with poverty and you gotta breathe, and no Obama's teeth gon' put colloquies in your pot to eat, and Oprah goes to Copenhagen but has no relations to children folk on the pavement getting smoked outside the station? What's peace when you've been waiting for 9 years in the safe, and as the days went more patient, now they saying deportation has the law forsaken us? We get awards for Satan's lust, go to war with hate plus the cause, we just make it up. What's peace when these racists won a civil war to end it all? Cause the president's black, that's what you wanna kill him for? We say stop the violence, but still there's more I'm feeling for mothers who lost their sons, praying that God heals their sores. This is my lifeblood I'm spilling for. What's peace when every week you drop the realest cause and you still ignore it?
together you got smooth drummer.
All right, welcome back to Smooth Drama. That was Jazari X. What's peace? Yeah, I don't think we're going to know too much about peace coming up here in the next few years or so. It's kind of crazy here. I'm scared. Like, wow.
Yeah,
you remember that. Yeah, it's very, very interesting what's going on here. And since we on that note, we're going to try to get Mr. Burleigh in here so we can talk about his very interesting book that I think is along the lines of what we're talking about tonight. Government conspiracies and all that kind of stuff. No, I'm down for that. I can just talk government conspiracies all day, every day. So we'll get Mr. Burleigh on here.
Hello.
Welcome to Smooth Drama. How you doing, sir?
Good, good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming on.
Hi, Jeremy. It's 100%. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. It's nice to talk to you, too.
All right. Well, I got to say, after reading your book and in light of actually what we're talking about tonight, I mean, your book, Eye of the Gods, and for those of you, people who don't know, won't you tell the people about your graphic novel, Eye of the Gods, and what the story is about?
Okay, well, Eye of the Gods, it's a psychological thriller. It's about a man named Sean Black who's cursed the ability of remote viewing. He has visions where he can see through other people's eyes and see things happening in other places. The visions are triggered by a surgical procedure where they actually clone his own DNA and grow new eyes that are resistant to ultraviolet radiation, resistant to aging, basically a perfect vision for the rest of his life. It's a surgical procedure in this world where the story takes place that's, you know, as common as having a, so, you know, lots of people have had this surgery. After he has this procedure, he starts having visions where he sees a murder happen. He actually thinks he's having a nightmare because it happens in the middle of the night. But then when he wakes up the next day, he realizes that the person really did die, but it's being reported in the news as a death by natural causes. Mm. So as he starts nosing around, he uncovers this conspiracy, but the people behind the conspiracy also uncover him. So his whole struggle is to find out what exactly is causing these visions, you know, and why the people behind them, why they're happening to him, before they end up killing him to hide their secret.
Mm. Now, I can see that happening.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, honestly, the story, a lot of it is, you know, is about cloning and, you know, biological technology, using it to create artificial organs. Part of the reason why I chose this as my first graphic novel, and it is the first book I've published. And part of the reason why I chose it is because I honestly thought if I didn't do it as my first book, by the time I get around to it, they would already be doing it. And I mean, I watched some videos online and listened to stuff in the news. They've already got things that they're working on, cloning organs like livers and kidneys, which, you know, they're pretty complex functioning. They still aren't able to do something as complex as, you know, as an eyeball yet. But, you know, they've already got stuff that they're growing, like ears on the backs of mice and stuff, you know. So, I mean, the whole thing of, like, genetic engineering in order to create or replace organs for human beings, I mean, that's already well underway. And I figure it's just, like, the testing getting it perfected to the point where they can say, yeah, we can do this without getting a big old lawsuit on our hands and start, you know, shipping it out and growing organs and, you know.
Well, I don't think that the groin, the eyeballs is all that far-fetched. I believe personally they've probably been doing it for a while. I mean, they showed the picture of growing the ears and whatnot on ice and other animals. I'm like, yeah, they probably already been growing kidneys and eyeballs and all these other things.
And Jimmy, you know, but you let me play devil's advocate just for a second. Now, you know that there are some people out there that would say, well, this is so far-fetched. You know, there's no way in the world that our government would do such a thing. Kind of, you know, and there's no way in the world, nobody's cloning anything. No, but this is all in your twisted imagination. What would you say, you know, to a person who is just skeptical of things like this going on right now? I know that they're going on, but to the people who don't really believe things like this are going on?
Well, to those people, what I would say is, you know, it may be well and good to be skeptical of the government doing something like that, but, you know, the business will do whatever they can to make a buck. And then if you look at, you know, who actually runs the government, who's lobbying, what major pharmaceutical companies are lobbying the government to, to have applications to, for patents to create all sorts of new radical technologies, they're lobbying to ease, a lot of the restrictions that are stopping us from doing, experiments with cloning and with stem cells and that sort of thing, that what they're already doing in other countries.
Right.
And, right. Those companies, they grease the wheels. They're the ones that are going to be deciding who does what. And like you said, the fact that it's probably already going on, I'm quite certain they're already testing the technologies. And, I'm sure that they're well underway with being developed, if not actively doing it. But I would say that being able to do it and being able to do it successfully is one thing. Having it something that you can roll out, even not even as a common medical procedure, but having to roll out something that's like FDA approved that you, like, let's say that you happen to be, a millionaire and can afford, a $500,000, organ transplant. Just having a word, something that's affordable for people like that is still a ways away. Some of the things where if they can do it once, that one time they do it's probably littered by, tens, twenties, maybe even 100, clinical trials to where it failed.
Well, I will interject this. Don't we have a story that was written a long time ago called Dr. Frankenstein? Isn't that what it was about in the first place?
Mm.
That's what it was all about. Yeah.
So, I mean, technically, if you look at it from that aspect, I've always been intrigued with the cloning. And say you clone a brain, you clone, as you did in your story, whatnot. Now, we know that they have technology where they can put in chips and parts in your body, and they can control those body parts from afar.
Oh, yeah.
So technically, if we say they do the eyes, who's to say they couldn't put a mini camera in? And, I mean, there was a guy who did it bootleg last year, and his government, I think he was somewhere in Europe, he had a camera on the back of his head.
Oh, I heard about it. It was for an art project where he wanted to record his experiences and just seeing how, I think he actually webcast everything that was in it onto, a website for the project.
Right. And so it's connected to his body.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we're playing, as my co-host said, devil's advocate, if we have the eyes and they have the little mini camera, because you have a laptop. If you have a webcam on your laptop, it's a little itty bitty thing.
Mm-hmm.
And who's to say you could have put that in the eyeball?
Yeah, I mean, microtransmissions are getting smaller and smaller. And like you said, with them already being able to control, people being able to control stuff, I know that there's been stories in the news for a few years now about how they were, putting chips into control small animals using, like you know, they were using rats, you know, to dig through, through earthquake rubble to find survivors. And then they were talking about, you know, militarizing it, being able to actually control insects, being able to make them fly, turn, land exactly wherever they want, and try to use those for spying and surveillance.
Right.
And so, you know, it's the fact that they're already doing it with simpler organisms, it's not even a stretch of imagination. It's a matter of, all right, all we need to do is just work out the zeros and ones. It's a little bit more complex, you know, with building on the blocks of existing technology. And like you said, the fact that I can't point to people that are actively doing it right now, but the idea that the technology and the concepts that I pose in the book are already out there,
right.
Here's the thing. Most of the stuff that I write tends to come from personal experience and then personal fears. Like, I actually grew up with poor vision, and, you know, at a certain point, I got LASIK surgery. But growing up, that was, like, my biggest fear as, you know, as a writer and as an artist, was losing my vision because, you know, the drawing and painting's been, you know, that's been my passion, my fuel. You know, it's my creative juice. It's what gets me going. It's what keeps me getting out of bed every day. So the idea of not being able to see always frightened me. And, you know, I actually put in the afterword of the book, there's an anecdote about the actual germ of the story was I was sitting in a doctor's office waiting to get my, I was getting my eyes dilated. And while I was waiting, I get bored easy, so I was like, I was still trying to read a magazine. And I was reading a magazine of, it was Newsweek, and it was the story of the first cloned sheep, Dolly.
Mm-hmm.
And reading that, I'm like, well, why couldn't they clone me some damn eyeballs? Because, you know,
right.
I'd like that better than having, you know, the contacts and glasses and all that. But the way that my mind tends to think is, be careful what you wish for. So the germ of the story was, okay, so let's say that they do that. So they do clone, they do have a technology where they're like, if your eyes are going bad, we can just clone your new ones, and we'll genetically modify them. So they're not going to wear out in a couple of years. It's going to be the rest of your life. You know, you're not going to need sunglasses anymore. We're going to modify them so ultraviolet radiation won't damage you. I'm like, well, that would be my perfect dream. And that's usually where I start with stories, is what happens if you get exactly what you wish for?
Well, that's
always a catch.
That's why I found your story fascinating. I read the premise. I'm like, yeah, and then as I got more into the story, it all made sense. And to me, it was like something right out of, we would see it in the news, and of course, people wouldn't believe it until it's too late.
Right.
Oh, no, I mean, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I was just thinking, when you first started writing this, and thinking of, you know, all of the different elements that you would add to it, and what we were just discussing about the warrantless searches and how you can't say anything anymore. And I definitely think you're onto something. Is, was there any type of fear that went into doing this before you, did you think first, like, maybe I shouldn't do this right now? maybe this is a little bit going a little bit too far, you know, because now if you say anything wrong or you say anything that sounds like it could be right, you know, maybe you'll get a knock at the door and, you know.
Well, so you know, I would say that the thought that something similar to what I you know, I describe in the book, if it were going on in, you know, the government program, you know, I know full well that that could be plausible, but I'm of the mindset that if you think that there's something that people should be alarmed about, that's not the time to cower. I mean, actually, you know, I tuned in, I heard the warrantless wiretapping, you know, conversation, and the fact that you guys are talking about this, it made me think, I mean, you get the government you ask for, and you get the government you deserve. I believe that's the expression. Yeah. You know, the fact that you guys are bringing this up and telling people, look, you can't be complacent about these things. You can't, you know, they're telling us how they're going to slit our own throats.
Right.
Literally.
Yeah.
They're saying, yeah, this is it. You guys sign off on this? All right, we're going to make this pen a little bit smaller. All right, you know what? We need to couple these liberties over here. We're going to make the pen a little bit smaller. It's the death of a thousand cuts. And, I mean, I don't consider myself a political person, but I do try to pay attention to world politics because I know they affect me. And it's going to affect my life and my family, people I care about. And it's self-serving in the fact that I pay attention because I know the world that I want to live in. But the sense is that when you feel that these things are being threatened, whether it's like you're writing a story like this might hit a little bit too close to home, or just you guys calling attention and bringing it up as a topic on the show, that's the time to shout it from the rooftops. It's not the time to say, oh, well, I should keep my head down, because you know what? All that means is that you're going to be the last. You're going to be the one last person to turn the lights out when it's time to shut the door.
Right.
Okay.
That's all it
okay.
means.
Now,
all right.
Now, in light of the eye of the gods, I know you've been writing and drawing for the majority of your life. What's next? What's up on the horizon for Jeremy?
Well, you know, I'm going something that's a little bit different. I'm going biblical.
Okay.
I've got a new genre that I'm calling Old Westament.
Old Westament? Tell us about
Old Westament.
I want to hear.
Well, my new book I'm working on right now, it's called Morningstar. And it's the story of Lucifer's fall from heaven told as a Western. So the conceit behind the story is that Lucifer is actually the marshal of heaven. And the seven archangels are sort of like, you know, they're sort of like the Magnificent Seven. And the story starts off where Lucifer, you know, he wasn't created to be evil. He was created originally to be the brightest of all the angels.
Right.
So, right. You know, he starts off, he's the leader of all these characters. And I'm treating it as a mythology. I'm not treating it as true to biblical text. I mean, I went through and I researched and I tried to make each of the seven archangels I tried to make the traits that they have in the story line up with the traits of biblical angels, but that said, I'm treating it much more as mythology. It's not like I'm doing, you know, just reinterpreting true biblical text. But it tells the story of basically how Lucifer went from being the brightest of all the angels to the darkest.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at it, if you're mirroring stories, I mean, you could say, okay, as the marshal, he has ultimate power, and as
yeah.
you know, in our real life of experiences, ultimate power corrupts. Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that's very true. And I mean, part of the thing that I was looking at in the story is that, in a way, part of something that helped me find the motivation to build the story around was 9/11. Because, you know, part of what happened with 9/11 is that, you know, we began this war on terror, and it's very obvious that there are people out there in the world trying to hurt American Americans.
Right.
I mean, just because I am skeptical of the government doesn't mean I don't love the country that we live in. I mean, if anything, the fight for civil liberties and for personal freedoms is something that comes from a desire for our country to be as great as the promise that the Founding Fathers wanted for all people. Well, for old rich white men, but
right.
landowners. But we remember baby steps. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Baby steps.
Baby
steps.
You need to think baby that way.
But the relationship to 9/11 was such that, you know, in this story, in the world that I'm telling the story in, before God created the angels in this world, He created these other creatures, and they were sort of, you know, like when you bake some cookies and that first batch just don't come out quite right?
Yeah.
They're a little salty, a little burnt, a little crispy. Well, they're just creatures, and they're sort of like, they're the crusty angels.
Mm.
I mean, basically, these creatures are the first demons, and they're, you know, they came out, they're misshapen, they're malformed. And they were born with this hunger and darkness inside them, so they were sort of cast out into the void before anything else was created. So then when God did create heaven and did create the angels, these creatures sort of like saw this light out from the void and saw these other creatures, and this one was living on the periphery, and they were envious. They were envious of these creatures that were being embraced by their creator, being loved by their creator, when they were shunned. And so these creatures basically waged war on the angels. Because the first question you might ask is heaven? Why would you need a marshal? So, but that's why. That's why there's a marshal. That's why these archangels are the deputies and the guardians of heaven. And, you know, it's not something where it's necessarily a Paradise Lost where it gets into the fall of man. It all takes place prior to the existence of man. But heaven, another reason why the Western story kind of fits in is that it's almost like I'm treating the creation of the universe as the new frontier. It is this Wild West, and it's beautiful, and it's untouched and unsullied by anything, and there's new beautiful creations, but it's still unknown and explored, and that is basically what heaven is in this story. So, that creation of this new universe is the new West, the new frontier.
I dig the premise. I thoroughly look forward to when are you talking about Are you close to finishing? Have a somewhat publishing date out?
Well, you know, I've been going a little bit slow on it because I want to make sure I have all my ducks in a row in the story. I'm probably going to have the first issue done probably about mid to late summer. And I'm going to try and finish. The whole story should be about 8 issues altogether, 8, like, 24-page chapters.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to try and publish. I'm shooting for publishing it quarterly. I'm going to self-publish it, fill it through my website, fill it at comic book conventions, and just get it out there. The main reason that I've been a little bit behind on it is because there's another project that I've been working on. There's an anthology book that I have a 3-part story that's running in. It's a book called Samurai. And my story in it, the book is basically a reinterpretation of what it means to be a samurai, the anthology. So there's a bunch of short stories in it. Some are science fiction, some are fantasy, some are historical stories. You know, there's all varieties of them. It's just like each creator kind of takes the words and says, well, how can I reinterpret this? And because most of the stuff I tend to write is a little bit dark and edgy. I've had friends for years that have been saying, Jeremy, will you please make something that I can show my kids? So like, you make powerful. Please write a stuff. Children. So the story that I wrote is about a little girl who finds a haunted samurai sword. And the book is called Samuraiya because it's about a little girl named Mariah who finds a sword. She and her brother, they're like going on a school field trip, and they're into the Wu-Tang Clan, they're into kung fu movies, and you know, they have this whole argument about this Japanese exhibit in the museum about whether how authentic it is, and like that sword doesn't even belong with that period, and wouldn't be beat up. So they argue about it, and Mariah's like, no, that's a real samurai sword. It's a museum. They wouldn't fake that. And the boy's like, look, it's fake. It's fake. So look, I'll show you. She goes, pulls the sword out, and it's sort of like an Excalibur, what releases this ghost, this ancient samurai who's trapped in there. But when it releases his spirit, it also breaks the spell and it alerts the people who originally trapped the samurai in there. So all these samurai and ninja come, you know, storming into the museum. People are running all over screaming. It's chaos. And now this girl has to fight all these evil warriors off. She has to basically be the defender of the sword because the ghost can't wield the sword. But the ghost also realizes that, you know, she's a young person. He does not want to put her in the position of having to make decisions about life or death. He doesn't want her to have to take a life and kill someone. So he casts a spell on the girl, and anyone that she strikes with the sword gets turned into an animal.
Very
interesting.
Okay, well, tell the people where they can find Jeremy Burley.
Okay, well, you can find Jeremy Burley at Optic House. That's Optic like eyeball, House like you live in, all one word, optichouse.com. And you can see that's where I've got my website. I've got my book is available to order online. You can also order it as an ebook in PDF form and CBZ formats. I've got some promo videos, a little bit of director's commentary. It's where I update on Samuraiya, the Samurai graphic novel, on Morningstar, so you can get all the stuff I do. I've got a sketch blog where I, you know, update sketches from life drawing classes and just concept art and all the goodness I'm working on. So that's my home online, so people can find me.
All right, because I can't wait, because, you know, you done drew me in, and now after you told us what you just told us here, I'm waiting to see you drop another one. So,
well
I was gonna say, when you do drop, you gotta come back and let us know, because we need to talk about it. We need to dish on it, and of course, I gotta get a copy.
Oh yeah, I will definitely hold one for you. I hold one for both of you. Thank you so. You know, I appreciate you guys having me. It's fun just being on top, chewing it up with you.
Hey, well. Anytime you if you're listening and there's something you want to dish on, feel free to dial us up. We open.
Well, I will. Thank you both. Thank you so much.
Hey.
Yes, I had a lot of fun. I didn't want you to stop telling the story of Samariah. Okay, I guess I'll just have to wait. Enjoy myself.
Everything.
I was going to say, everything I told you on that, that's just the first chapter. So it definitely goes from there. I try to set up an interesting premise quick so people say, ooh, I want to see what happens next.
I want to see what happens next. So now, we want to thank you, Mr. Burleigh, for coming on the show. And we, of course, are going to have you back on again. And I'm sure I'll see you at one of the Comic-Con things. I just stalk you.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you both for having me on. It's my pleasure. I really enjoyed talking to both of you guys.
All right. Thank you very much. You have a great night, sir.
Good night.
Yeah, you guys have a good evening. Thank you. Good night.
All right. That was Jeremy Burleigh.
Yes.
Got me mesmerized. I mean, one, his book, I Have the God, if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. It's one of the best graphic novels I've read. I mean, murder, intrigue, government conspiracy, all of it's right there. Plus some art also. Free your mind and your ass will follow. And on that note, we gonna go on a break here. This is Mystic Ghetto Lullaby.
M-Y-S-T-I-C. Ready? S-T-I-E.
This is a street soliloquy. Time is in the essence. The clock's been spinning, but they can't erase our presence. Born a warrior, now become a soldier. Rock them to sleep if they ask, I told ya. Justice ain't limited, the pain comes with the fee. The world is a ghetto, no such thing as sometimes free. We not gon' bleed, strung from a promise that one day be killing me, to be honest. But never give up, never give in, never no way, never again. So lullaby for the innocent and guilty, food for the soul in the game that's pure filthy.
See, I don't get a lullaby.
Like this forever, Kim. Just saying. Speaking of just saying, I was reading this story about this girl, Dayton, Ohio. I think you're a little familiar with that. Who said that her Ohio charter school is punishing her for not immediately reporting that she saw two classmates having sex on a school bus and for changing her seat during the bus trip.
Yeah.
I find this kind of odd because we're talking about one, a 14-year-old. And as a 14-year-old, I don't know, it's been a while, but I remember kind of being shy when you see some stuff happen and you kind of grossed out by it, you move. And the fact that she didn't tell immediately, she's being punished when I'm reading that there were chaperones
on the bus.
Now, last time I checked, if we gonna get the terminology for the definition for chaperones. Chaperone means to watch and observe the people that were the chaperones having sex with each other and didn't notice.
What were they doing that they didn't notice 14-year-olds having sex on a bus?
Well, it's not even about what you, if you don't notice that there are people having sex on the bus, you're not very good at chaperoning. That's not the job. You can't be the lookout. Everybody's going to die.
I mean, what bothers me about the story is that the boy wanted to sit next to the girl, so he made her move. He made her move out. She was originally sitting next to the other girl, and the boy made her move. And remembering when I was a 14-year-old girl, you know, you get scared of people. You know, you have bullies in school. There's no telling what he could have said to her, you know, and even if she did want to tell, come on now, she's 14. What do you think will really happened to her or what she would have had to face, you know, after she told what happened. And maybe she was relying on the grown chaperones to notice that something was going wrong, in which they didn't. So now she's barred from her eighth grade prom because she didn't tell that somebody else's kids were not doing what they were supposed to be doing.
Right, but not only that, but she didn't tell in a promptly manner, as
right.
they put it out. I'm like, that's chaperone's job. That's not my job. My job is to be 14 and not to fart on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything else, I'm not guilty of. I didn't do anything wrong. So I'm perplexed that she is the one that can't go on her prom because she did the right thing by telling.
Right. Now, it says that the two other students were suspended.
Okay.
But she was suspended and barred from the prom.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm not understanding.
She's punished double?
Yeah. She shouldn't be punished, but, you know, these folks in charge, they kind of don't make sense. It seems it's something about our so-called leadership structure in the States here. They kind of have it backwards. I'm thinking that's my thing. I think they have it backwards.
Well,
I was gonna say, speaking of having it backwards, you know, we went through a little something with Grant Hill and Jalen Rose, the Fab Five documentary, where Jalen Rose made the comment about Grant Hill being a sellout because he went to Duke, because he was recruited by Duke. And we have now, again, Bernard Hopkins, boxer Bernard Hopkins, who, you know, lives in Philly, and Donovan McNabb, former quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, for those who don't know, Donovan McNabb had always been criticized by Philadelphians, which Bernard Hopkins happens to be one. Now, because people in Philly, they're just bitter. There's just something wrong with the people in Philly. I mean, y'all have a statue of Rocky, and Rocky is not a real person, but y'all have a statue of Rocky like he was a real guy, and Sylvester Stallone is in the Boxing Hall of Fame, but he's an actor, but we're not going to go there. The fact that Bernard Hopkins came out and said Donovan McNabb isn't black enough. He's got a suntan. That's all. And you know, he's like that because he grew up in the suburbs. And he wasn't, you know, he didn't grow up in the quote-unquote hood. I mean, and talked about this before, but you can't talk about it enough than saying that you're validated by how fucked up your childhood was. I mean, because basically, but these dudes, hip hop dudes, all these dudes coming out, they're saying they're hood validation. They're validation as a person. Like, I'm a real person if my life was fucked up as a
child. If my life is shitty, that means that
I'm real.
Yeah. Remember we were talking about, you know, the cool thing now is to be an idiot?
Yeah. Yeah.
So now I guess, you know, he's not, McNabb is not down enough, he's not cool enough, he's not real enough, because he didn't have to struggle growing up.
Yeah, well, yeah, because his parents took care of him. That you know, that's that shit right there. You know, why the hell your parents take care of you? That's just
well,
yourself.
I guess I'm not down enough. I'm not real enough because my parents took care of me too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm a sellout because my parents love me.
Really?
that's where we're at. At the end of the day, you're a sellout if your parents took care of you.
Wow.
I must preface this by saying that Bernard Hopkins is a boxer and he gets hit in the head for a living.
Well, there it is.
When he practices, he gets hit in the head. So, yeah.
Somebody was quit ringing that bell.
Yeah, exactly. That bell has been ringing a little too much, and that's the idiocy. You know,
yes.
That mental. And since we're talking about the mental, we of course have to talk about the physical. I mean, rapper M Bone of the group Cali Swag District. Some of you may know him from his hit song, Teach Me How to Dougie. He was a victim of a drive-by shooting. And he's dead.
Oh.
Yeah, he died in Inglewood, California. Real name, Monte Talbert. Sitting in a car on the 400 block of North La Brea Avenue when a car pulled up next to him and fired two rounds that struck him in his head. Now, some folks probably think that shit is cool. He went out as a G, whatnot.
No, he did not.
Whatever. But, you know, that folks get their mythos raised when they die senseless violence. I mean, isn't that why we celebrate the Tupac and Biggie? Because they got shot.
Right.
You know, and not equating M-Bone with Tupac and Biggie, but I kind of am because now his memory, it's unfortunate that he died. I mean, it's another case of the black-on-black crime, the ignorance that's perpetuated over and over again. And I can't help but echo the two because we talk about the mental, which was McNabb and Hopkins, and then we talk about the physical. M. Bone the dead for what? I mean, what's the beef? You know, that's
such a young life. He was only 22 years old and just started his career a year ago. And he's gone.
Yeah.
For something stupid.
Well, and I want to put this out there that I'm not necessarily talking about him because he's famous. I'm talking
right.
about the situation.
Yes, sir.
With the drive-by shootings. You know, I'm not, you know, everybody's getting some getting back for what? You know, somebody stepped on your shoe or
yeah.
looked at you wrong or he stared at your girl's ass too long. I mean, what? I wore a blue shirt. You didn't like it. I wore a red pair of tennis shoes. You didn't like it. You got to die over that?
Is it worth taking somebody's life because you don't agree with them?
Well, as the song Ghetto Lullaby Mystic just said, can we live like this forever? On that note, I want to thank Mr. Jeremy Berlay for coming on the show. I want to thank you. I want to thank you, Ms. 100%, for coming on and being a great co-host that you are. I want to thank the listeners for listening. I appreciate your patronage. And keep on listening because we're going to keep spitting this shit. Like I keep saying, can we live like this forever? Can we start making some sense? Anyway, I'm Dick Hugger, a.k.a. F the N-Word, Smooth Drama. We out.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth.
Drama.